This is the Concealed Carry Podcast, episode number 79. Welcome to the Concealed Carry Podcast, part of the USA Firearm Training Network. I'm your host, Riley Bowman, and today I have with me, not Jacob, but instead, but equally as important, I think, Matthew Marister.
Thanks, man. Thanks, Riley.
So thankful to have you on the podcast with me today. And actually, we're recording this a little bit early. This is the typical Monday news episode of the Concealed Carry Podcast to be released on December 19th. But we're actually recording this on December 17th. So, folks, it's entirely possible that some crazy, either awesome or crazy terrible news story happens between now and Monday morning. We hope not for anything terrible, but you never know. But anyway, so thanks for joining us today, folks. We'll get into some great news stories. We have some updates about some legal battles or laws being talked about or even passed in some cases, like what recently happened in Ohio. We've got school districts allowing, you know, teachers to carry guns in places in Colorado, which is awesome. I love that. UPS drivers delivering wrong packages. We'll get into that. That'll be a fun one. All kinds of fun stuff today, so looking forward to it. And it's always a pleasure to have you as my guest, Matthew.
Thanks, Riley. It's great to be here. Thank you.
Today's episode of the Concealed Carry Podcast, however, is brought to you by Guardian Nation. And if you haven't joined Guardian Nation yet, come on, what are you waiting for?
Stay tuned, seriously.
Guardian Nation members just recently were able to meet, you know, basically face-to-face, I mean virtually, of course, with Kyle Lamb, wonderful guy, fantastic instructor, and all-around American, genuine American hero. Anyway, you couldn't get in on that unless you were a Guardian Nation member, so you're missing out. But let's get right into it here. We got our usual Monday training tip. So what is that this week? Well, I have here establishing grip. And I mean, this is a fundamental. It's basic. And I'll just tell you, Matthew, I have been practicing like a madman recently for getting ready for American Marksman. As you know, I got to go down to Alabama in less than 3 weeks now. That's crazy.
Nice.
Like 3 weeks from yesterday, Friday the 16th, I've got to, like, that's the, they have a special dinner for competitors and their guests and opportunity for a little bit of practice before the competition actually starts on Saturday. So actually three weeks from today, I'm going to be competing in American Marksman. I'm just like totally stoked and psyched out and pumped up and maybe a little bit scared all at the same time because I really want to do well. So I've been practicing, like, dude, yesterday, today, this week. So this week in total, I've probably shot 1,200 rounds.
Wow.
You know, like I'm every chance I get, I am going and practicing and training. And I'll tell you, when you get that opportunity, and I couldn't do this, you know, indefinitely. There's no doubt about that. Like I couldn't go and shoot 1,200 rounds a week, you know, forever. I just don't have that kind of time nor the resources, the money, whatever, you know. And but I'll tell you, when you do that, it's amazing, like what it opens up your mind to, because what is on my mind right now is establishing grip. I've been doing all sorts of different drills and things, and you know, I just keep pushing myself. Like, okay, all I can think is that surely I can do all right at the competition if I can shoot really accurately, really fast, right?
right.
I mean, if I can make accurate shots, whether it's fast or slow, but then if I can also still do that, you know, and shoot quickly, it's a no-brainer. And so really pushing myself to the limit, I've started to really learn and discover some things about me, you know, so I'm really pushing the envelope as far as getting my gun out of a holster. Now, I don't know that we'll actually necessarily be drawing from a holster during this competition. They didn't have us do anything like that at the regional championships or at the local qualifiers, but I still think it's a really good, you know, practice and a really good drill to come out of my holster, have to, you know, do it quickly, and one of the biggest challenges that for me that I've been learning this week is doing that super quickly and getting a really good grip.
Yeah.
And my epiphany, Matthew, is that if I do not get a good grip, and I'm not talking so much with my shooting hand. I don't really have a problem with getting my shooting hand, my dominant hand on that gun appropriately. What I have a problem with sometimes is getting that support hand on there in the proper manner. And if I don't, then I totally fail in my shooting accurately and shooting quickly.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that second hand or your offhand or support hand, I mean, that's a huge part of the equation. That's, you know, I rated about 60-70% of your grip comes from probably your offhand. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, so that's a good thing you picked up on that, you know what I mean? To try to like focus in on like making sure that you use that offhand and get it on there really good and get a good grip.
Yeah, you know, I know it sounds kind of, it's like, well, yeah, duh, if you don't have a good grip, of course you can't shoot good. But the thing is, when you're like really trying to push yourself and you're trying to, you know, like one place where I feel like you can, if you're an average shooter and you're trying to become like a really good shooter as far as, you know, getting shots on target really quickly, one place that for sure people can really shave off some time is in that draw. Mm-hmm. You know, because, you know, I mean, it wasn't that many years ago that I was lucky if I could get the gun out of the holster. You know, I was pretty consistent with it, you know, and I could do it consistently without fumbling. I could get shots on target accurately. But I mean, I second and a half, maybe 1.3, mm-hmm. you know, 1.2 occasionally, maybe a second and a quarter. But lately I've been really pushing myself to get, and I'm talking stock gun, you know,
right.
Just like concealment type holsters, not necessarily like inside waistband, but not like, you know, big time offset, you know, competition type rigs, like just standard holster. And sometimes with retention, like sometimes I use my actual class 3 LE, you know, duty type holster. And I've been really pushing myself to get sub second, you know, like, and I've been getting right around, you know, a 90, you know, 0.90 seconds, you know, on draw to my first shot.
That's really good.
And I'm happy with that. I still feel like maybe I could even go just a touch faster, but I know guys like, I know there's guys out there that are faster for sure. Right. But, you know, but I was recently listening to a podcast where Rob Latham was being interviewed, and he was talking about, you know, getting, you know, around 70, 75. And he's using, you know, in some of those situations, I'm sure, you know, much nicer holsters than what I've got and crap. But besides the fact he's like the greatest shooter on planet Earth. But my point is, though, and I've really subscribed to the Rob Latham school of thought on this. And he talks about, he's like, you know, I don't really think in terms of 60, 30, or 40, 70, 30, 80, 20, you know, like, or I'm gripping 50-50 with each hand, or, you know, he just says he grips like heck.
Right.
He grips with like all his strength, especially in his support hand, just clamps down with all that he's got to, because the whole goal is try to keep that gun from moving whatsoever when you're doing anything else to it, including pressing the trigger. And so I've been really just, you know, I've got my grip master here. I keep, you know, working on strengthening my grip, just doing all this crazy stuff. And so I'm just trying to grip like heck on that, you know, with my support hand. But the thing is, if you don't get that support hand in the right place, it doesn't matter.
Right.
And I know it sounds silly, but it's like, it's totally hit me this week. Like, even if I have to take a tenth of a second more to make sure I get that grip totally solid, it's worth, you know, its weight in gold as far as the end result and getting accurate shots quickly.
Oh, yeah. And especially, I mean, what always, you know, is a big wake-up call for shooters is when you start trying to shoot under time, you know, under really short time hacks. And, yeah, you can shoot accurately with a bad grip if you're not trying to shoot for speed with follow-up shots, you know, because you can bring the gun back down, wait till it settles and shoot again. But when you want, when you have to get multiple shots on quickly on target and be accurate, there's no way you can do it unless you're controlling that gun. You can't let that gun kick your butt. You have to be able to control it. And the only way you're going to control it is by having that firm grip. And like you said, if it takes you, you know, almost white knuckling it, you know, I'm not saying like, you know, where you're stressing your hand out so much, but if you need to, you know, grip that gun as strong as you can without going into like where your muscles start shaking and everything, but
right,
you know what I mean? Not over to trying to squeeze it apart, but yeah, that'll allow you to get that gun won't move and those sights will be right there. You just, all you got to do is really squeeze the trigger and you're on target.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think what's really opened my eyes too is it's not just that, like when I get my grip really well established, it's not just that the shooting platform is, you know, more immovable as far as, you know, I have less movement when I'm pressing the trigger. You know, I'm just in general a lot more solid. It's also that, like, I feel more confident. Like it's also faster to get sight picture on your target. Like everything just kind of falls into place. And so that's really just been kind of the epiphany this week, is like, holy crap, like I really have to make sure I nail that grip, because when I do, everything else just falls right in line for me. And that's huge. That is so, so, so huge. And so anyway, about establishing grip, I mean, the training tip is supposed to be a training tip. And up to this point, I've been kind of talking about like why it's so important and why you must, you know, really nail that, especially as part of your draw stroke. Well, just some quick tips about, you know, helping make sure you establish grip effectively. And Matthew, anything else you have to add? And that is, for me, you know, we start with our shooting hand going to the gun, right? And we want to make sure we get the proper grip right from the get-go with our shooting hand, with our dominant hand. We come straight up out of the holster. I basically draw like I'm going to my armpit, okay? Rotate down 90 degrees. So now, you know, muzzle went from pointing at the ground to basically level, pointing at the target, but I haven't quite joined hands yet. And then right then, almost, you know, the very next instant, I'm bringing the gun and the shooting hand, or in the support hand, together. And you really have to, through lots of practice and establishing muscle memory, get an index point with your support hand so that you hit the same point every time. And then I've learned that I really have to make sure that I hit that index point and that my fingers and my fingertips wrap around next. And basically, I'm digging my fingertips in between my knuckles of my shooting hand. And like, I'm really just trying to get those suckers locked down, like basically pinned into the, you know, in between my knuckles of my shooting hand. And then as I'm extending out to the target, I'm simply bringing the rest of the hand, the palm of the hand, the base of, you know, the fat, meaty part of the hand to the open, you know, part of the grip. So that's what I would suggest, is that you work, listeners, that you work over and over and over and over again, finding this index point. And it starts with your index finger of your support hand, so that it comes over and it's hitting the, in, you know, in my case here, I'm actually holding a cert pistol in my hand as I'm doing this. The index finger of my support hand is meeting my middle finger of my shooting hand right there, you know, just below the trigger guard. And I got to hit that. If I miss that point and then I don't get my fingertips wrapped around the backside and really get those nailed, then I just totally miss it. And it ends up costing you significantly in terms of time and accuracy later on in the, you know, shooting that you're going to do. So any other thoughts or tips, Matthew?
No, I mean, you nailed it. That's, I mean, you explained it perfectly. I would just add that, you know, a lot of times people want to get out to the range and practice this right away and say like, okay, this, I want to see if this is going to help me. And especially when you're changing your grip or even slightly changing, you know, how you grip the pistol, it makes you go nuts because it doesn't feel correct. It doesn't feel right. It's not what you're used to. So a lot of times people go out to the range, they're trying this new grip and they can't shoot as well as they did, you know, because there's a learning curve getting over that, like, you know, feels awkward stage. So then they throw it out because their first, you know, three or four shots aren't where they want them to be, you know? Mm-hmm. So what I recommend is, if you're going to change somebody's grip, or if you're going to change your grip, or even if you're just trying to better your grip or whatever, see what works, do it while you're dry firing, do it at home, or, you know, before you even put any rounds down range, where you start getting this idea like, oh, that round wasn't exactly where I wanted it, or this, because if you can kind of practice it, and you can kind of say, you know what, this does feel a little bit more secure. It feels weird, but let me keep trying it. It feels more secure. Keep trying it until it starts to become more natural feeling, and then go out and shoot it. So you miss that whole, you know, I'm feeling awkward stage. It doesn't feel right. And I normally get 10 out of 10 in the target. This time I only got 6 out of 10. This grip isn't for me. I'm going to go back to my old, you know, cup and saucer type grip, or whatever it is, you know? And so don't discourage yourself by trying to go live too soon with your grip. Just practice it. Like you were saying, you know, Riley, you're saying, you're describing each finger where it goes and everything. Practice that. Grip that pistol in your hand and feel exactly where it feels good, without even ammo, without even being downrange. And then, you know, once it starts to become second nature, then go out and shoot it. Mm.
Yeah. Good stuff. Thank you for your input as well, Matthew. So work on it. And along with what you're saying, you're talking about doing this at home, do a lot of dry fire practice, you know, just dry runs going through and establishing this grip and all that. You got to do it, like, not just dozens of times, like hundreds of times, you know, to really get it to where it just becomes second nature. And as I've been listening and paying attention to a lot of what the top shooters in the world have been, what they say, what they teach, what they preach, what they practice, watching some videos, listening to some podcasts, reading some articles, stuff like that, you know, it becomes very apparent that, you know, you have to make these fundamentals just become so second nature that you don't think about them, you know. It just has to be that way. And whether it's competitive shooting that you're into or self-defensive, you know, shooting, it doesn't matter. It has to all be second nature to where you don't even think about it anymore. All righty. So let's get into some news. First up, this is actually not, you know, firearms related or anything. I just thought it was interesting, and I thought we should talk about it just real quick. And just today, Dr. Henry Heimlich, the man behind the life-saving maneuver, the Heimlich maneuver that pretty much everybody should be familiar with or is familiar with, he just died today. He was 96 years old. Wow, what a life. His method of stopping people from choking to death has been popularized since 1974, and they estimate he has saved, you know, thousands and thousands of thousands of lives due to the Heimlich maneuver.
Wow. I mean, you think about it, like making a mark on society, you know what I mean? Or making your impact or what you bring to the world. And I mean, just something as simple as that. How crazy is that? That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Pretty good legacy.
Yeah, you know, and the interesting thing too, if you read in a little further, is it wasn't just the Heimlich maneuver that he, I mean, that is obviously what he's famous for and what everybody knows him for. And I actually would doubt that many people even know, you know, that the guy actually behind that was still alive until just yesterday or until today.
Right.
He actually, as a young surgeon, it says here, this was from a statement from the Heimlich family, he was the first American to devise and perform a total organ replacement. Oh, how about that?
Wow.
And later, he came up with a device that saved thousands of soldiers' lives during the Vietnam War. And that is known as the Heimlich chest drain valve, which is still used worldwide for patients undergoing chest surgery.
Huh. Wow.
And I kind of have to wonder if I haven't had that used on myself, the Heimlich chest drain valve, because years ago I sustained an injury where I had a collapsed lung and a ton of broken ribs, and they had to put a drain valve in my chest to drain fluid out. So maybe that was the Heimlich chest drain valve. So I don't know, but thank you, Dr. Henry Heimlich, and we're sorry you've passed on, but you've lived a good life and done a lot of good things for people, and so way to go, and you'll be missed, I'm sure. So, alrighty, next story from Ohio, and on our OhioGunTraining.com website, which is a site Matthew should be familiar with. You're based in Columbus, And you teach courses, and we've got courses listed right now. It looks like we've got courses coming up for you January 7th, January 8th, February 11th. So folks, if you're anywhere near the Columbus, Ohio area, Matthew is a fantastic instructor, and you need to go check out OhioGunTraining.com and sign up for any of his courses. I mean, most of these I think are concealed carry courses, but I assure you're going to learn a lot of good, great stuff from Matthew. But Matthew, I'm going to let you kind of take the lead on this, because I'm sure, you know, you being kind of on the ground there, so to speak, you know, tell us a little bit about what's going on in Ohio in the state legislature. And so forth there.
Yeah, so basically what happened was a House Bill 48 passed, and then it went to the Senate, where it became Senate Bill 199, and that ultimately passed as well. So now it's on the governor's desk. It's on Governor Kasich's desk. So hopefully it gets signed. But the idea of it, when it started out, it was obviously for a gun rights bill. So some of the main things that it was aimed to do is it's going to allow military, active duty military, the right to carry concealed without a permit. So so that's a big thing.
Excellent.
You know, I think that's huge. And it even goes a step further than just that, because, you know, the military, you can be in the military as young as, 17, 18 years old. But in Ohio and many other states, you can't possess a handgun until you're 21, and you can't get a concealed carry permit until you're 21. So you send somebody over, you know, in combat, 18 years old, they come back, they can't even own a handgun or get a concealed carry permit. So this bill is going to even allow those that are active duty members, provided they have their active duty military ID and documentation from their command that says, you know, that they passed some firearms proficiency training, to carry concealed, even if they're not 21 and they don't have a concealed carry permit. So that's, I mean, I think that's huge. And it makes sense to me. And then a couple other things. The original bill was hoping, the House bill that passed, put in language that it provided the public building, we're talking about like any public building or college campus, universities, things like that, it provided they didn't have active security measures, like screening measures to come into the building, that you would be able to conceal carry there. It kind of got watered down, or it did get watered down between the House and the Senate. The Senate bill that was approved changed the language and just made it so it gives the college or university or that, you know, that business or that public building institution the right to allow if they want to. Because right now, even if a college wanted to, they couldn't allow concealed carry the way the law is written now in Ohio. So right. That, I mean, I think it's a good movement towards that. I wish it would have retained the initial kind of language in it. Mm-hmm. But you know, it's a good step. And the final big thing that was in there, and there's some other stuff in there, but a couple big things. The final big thing was in Ohio, you know, employers can prohibit their employees from carrying, you know, concealed or any firearm on the property. And this was even included in the employee's vehicle. So, employees were getting fired for not bringing their firearm in the building, but just having it in the parking lot, which, and in their car, locked up in their car, which was addressed in the House bill. They wanted to put concealed carriers under a protected class. So they were trying to list concealed carriers as a protected class, no different than like race, gender, creed, you know, sexual orientation, all that stuff. Well, that got changed, and they didn't put it as concealed carriers as a protected class. They just put it as changed the verbiage in it and said an employer can no longer fire an employee solely on the fact that they bring their firearm and leave it locked in their car. So they can still prohibit you from bringing it in the building and everything, but they can't fire you for leaving it in your car. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they could find another reason to fire you if they really wanted to, but yeah, so I think it's a good step for Ohio. And hopefully, I mean, I don't see why it wouldn't pass. Kasich wouldn't sign it into law. It's not really outlandish, anything in there. And it passed pretty handily in the Senate. I think it was 68-25. So pretty decidedly. So I think it should be signed into law.
Cool.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody anticipates Governor Kasich not signing it. So good stuff. Good summary too. Thanks for all that info, Matthew. So that's really, that's really good to see. We just had the situation on Ohio State campus a few weeks ago. This was already kind of in the works, and when that happened, I think it's just, this legislation, really came into light at that point too. Now, this certainly doesn't take things to the level that we'd like to see, as you kind of mentioned. We'd certainly like to see even more. At least universities have the option, if they choose to allow for concealed carry on their campuses. I don't anticipate, especially any major universities or colleges, taking advantage of that. But like you said, and like the title of our article on OhioGunTraining.com is a step in the right direction. And so let's take any win that we can right now. And, there's always next year. And, when people see, laws like this passed and they, a year later go, well, nothing, the sky didn't fall down, when we did this. So we, okay, we're okay with, this other thing. You got to chip away at things sometimes. And so that's what we're doing here. So let's move on now to Michigan. So in Michigan, an appeals court has upheld Michigan school district's gun ban. Now, this honestly does not surprise me all that much. But let me just quote here from guns.com. It says, despite state law allowing guns on school property, Michigan school districts can ban firearms from schools and events, according to an opinion handed down this week by the Michigan Court of Appeals. This three-judge panel reversed the lower court's decision on Thursday to allow Clio Area School District to ban guns district-wide. But it also upheld the ruling in a similar case challenging policies in Ann Arbor. It is what it is. It really, like I said, shouldn't come as a major shock to anybody. To give you a little bit of a background, essentially, the school district brought this case to the state's appellate court after losing in a lower court decision. They lost to gun rights organization Michigan Gun Owners in 2015. The gun owners basically sued for. And one where the initial ruling sided with them in that the interpretation of state law that allows for concealed carry permit holders to either carry open or concealed firearms on campus, and the lower court said schools cannot prevent legal permit holders from carrying on school grounds. Kind of interesting. But this has now been reversed at the appellate court level. So, the battle can still continue continue on up the chain in the court system. So who knows what will come out of it. But, just wanted to report and let people know that this did get overturned. I love quotes like this. So the, Michigan Gun Owners Attorney, so the organization, the gun rights organization, their attorney, Jim Mikowski, there's a couple of quotes here in this article, and he talks about here, he says how he's disappointed that by the decision, but not surprised, and he quotes here, it's just wrong-headed thinking. No law is going to stop the next mass shooting at a school. We already know that. And he continues, it's silly to think otherwise. No one wants the next Columbine. And I think what I was just thinking when I read this was that could almost be said by the other side too. We're like, we don't want the next Columbine, thus we can't have people carrying guns even on school property. But the reality is what he said there is very true in that, no law is going to stop or prevent you know, people that are intent on doing harm from doing just that. So, you know, we cover these sorts of things all the time and talk about how, you know, well, why are we so concerned with the law abiding folk? The law abiding folk aren't who we need to be concerned with, but, you know, it's the never ending battle. So,
yeah.
Yeah, anyway, so, you know, on a brighter note, however, there is one school district right here in my home state, well, home state now, of Colorado, that has recently voted now, just this past Wednesday, which also happened to be the 4-year anniversary of the Newtown, Connecticut mass shooting. On that same day, in the evening, actually, the Hanover School District number 28, which is the eastern side of El Paso County here in Colorado, they voted to allow school staff or school district staff to carry guns in their schools and on their campuses. And in Colorado, there is a provision that allows school districts to do this. And Hanover School District is not the only one, nor the first to take advantage of this. In fact, one school in Weld County has been allowing staff to carry concealed weapons for a few years now. About 3 years ago, Briggsdale School changed its policies to allow it. Four of its employees went through training to become security officers. And that's the key. So in Colorado law, there's a provision where basically if you are classified as a security officer and there's a set, you know, curriculum of training that you've got to go through, then you can become essentially a school security officer, but you could still be a teacher. Or you could be the librarian. It doesn't really matter who you are, but you got to go through all the requisite training and jump through all the loopholes, and then you're able to do this. And school districts have that leeway here in Colorado to do so. So Hanover School District is the most recent one to do this. And so I'm, you know, I'm very happy to see it. They recognize, you know, how guns in the hands of good guys can shorten the time and the opportunity that someone that comes in to do their students or their staff harm. That's the way this works. And especially, this is a rural school district. People should know, like, it can take half an hour for police to effectively respond to an active shooting at one of their schools. So that also, you know, you could kind of see why this might be even more of a priority for them. But understand, it wasn't like this wasn't one-sided at all. It was actually split fairly evenly in the school district amongst parents and community members as far as whether they supported or didn't support this measure. But also, it passed basically by a one-vote margin in this on the school board. But it happened, and so bravo.
Yeah, I think people would be surprised if they knew how many districts, because Ohio is similar to that, where they, you know, it's up to the district if they want to allow concealed carrier, trained concealed carrier on the elementary school level and stuff. I think people would be surprised if they knew, you know, those which districts allow that, and that there's not, you know, these. You know, like you said, the sky is not falling. There's not guns just falling out of teachers' desks and briefcases and kids walking around with, you know, open carry and stuff. I think they'd be surprised and to see that, you know, it's not any more dangerous. In fact, you know, you would hope that your kid would be at that school if there was a shooting going on, because somebody could be there instantaneously to help. So,
yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think it's great. I mean, here's the requirements that these teachers have to go through to be able to have this option to carry concealed on campus. And this is legit training. It's 24 hours, wow. Which if you think about it, it's 3 8-hour days. They got to have 4 hours in the classroom, 6 hours of active shooter training, and then 14 hours of live fire on the range training.
Wow.
You know, so I mean, it's exactly like we hear these arguments made where people are like, oh, you know, like, we can't have guns in schools. Like, you know, the guns are going to be falling out of the teacher's desk, you know, and far from it. Like, these people are going to be extremely well trained compared to, honestly, your average citizen. And they're going to take the responsibility seriously. I just,
yeah, I mean, if you're going through that, if you're going through that much training, it's not something that you just did a decision you made at the spur of the moment, just on a whim, like, hey, I want to go spend 24 hours and go train, you know. Yeah, I can't see many people just doing that just for, you know, just for kicks.
Yep.
It's probably because they have a distinct desire to protect, you know, innocent lives, and they're a responsible person. So,
yeah.
It's a no brainer to me. I mean, if my kid went to a school like that, I wouldn't have a care, you know, a worry about that, you know, at all.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, glad to see it, and we'll hope to see more school districts do the same. Now, here's a kind of I see it as almost a funny news story. and get this. So UPS delivered a gun recently, this was delivered to a family in Oceanside, New York. So, I mean, we know that. Keep that in mind. This is New York State. So we know things are kind of wacky there anyway where it comes to gun laws. And I saw this reported all over the place. And I really like and appreciate – this is on BearingArms.com site, which, you know, we reference from time to time. And I appreciate their take on this story because here's the title. UPS incorrectly delivers gun. Associated Press delivers fake news. and the fake news that they're referring to is how the AP and a ton of news organizations talked about how it was a so-called assault rifle that was delivered. When, in fact...
There's
yeah, it was not an assault rifle. And in fact, it was a five-shot bolt-action Barrett M95 50 caliber rifle. Far from an assault rifle. Even if you like take liberals at their word, as far their liberal definition of an assault rifle is an AR-15 semi-automatic, which, you know, we would say it's not, but even if you take them at that, this still doesn't fit that description. It's bolt action.
But it's oh, it's got black, a muzzle brake.
Yeah, it's black. It's got a pistol grip. A big old massive muzzle brake. This is an assault rifle, you know. Anyway, so funny thing is, so this is delivered mistakenly to this family in New York, and I think it was supposed to go to, like, if I read correctly somewhere, I think it was actually supposed to end up somewhere in Texas.
Oh,
so like UPS really screwed up here. And it was supposed to be shipped to and actually, I don't know if we know exactly what happened. You know, it could have been something where it was getting shipped to a dealer, you know, for a transfer, for a purchase of some sort. But it could also be a situation where it was being shipped as a gun for repair. You know, certainly you as a gun owner, especially with a rifle, you know, if you got to send a gun to a manufacturer or something for repair, you're absolutely allowed to do that, you know, and they could ship it back. Anyway, so it's just kind of a funny story, and it's amazing that it could be so you know, messed up, both in the terms of reporting as well as that the UPS could mess up so bad. I'm frankly impressed with how well the UPS does with delivering packages, but that's a big no-no right there.
I love the Associated Press, the first sentence in the article. It says a New York couple was horrified. Like, they open up this gift, they open up this package and they see this rifle. And I can just imagine, like, the word horrified. They're like, it could have been a severed head and it wouldn't have shocked them anymore. You know, it's like, oh my God, what are we going to do? We're horrified.
Yeah,
I don't know what.
I think I read a story somewhere too. I saw this, you know, on about 10 different news sites, and I think I read one where it described them as like being afraid to touch it once they opened it and saw what it was. You know, they just kind of like it talked about how they like sheltered their child and, you know, like locked them in a room somewhere in the house, and then like stepped back from it and waited for police to arrive. You know, so it gives you an idea of probably the mindset of this New York couple. Obviously not gun people.
Maybe we could get their address and send them some Play-Doh and some like flowers and coloring books and stuff. So here, help them like calm down.
Create your safe space.
Yeah. some like Zen music and stuff that can just kind of calm down. God forbid.
Oh boy, you know, it's funny because if this had happened with me, you know, if this gun showed up on my doorstep, I would have been like, sweet, Merry Christmas,
man. This is my lucky day. I never win anything.
Oh man, so here's a fun one also from Colorado. I reported on Fox 31 Denver, so the Fox News affiliate here locally, and this story was in Colorado Springs, Colorado. And this, I kind of picked up on this one, one, because it was local, and two, just because it's kind of a crazy, bizarre story. So the story goes that you had two men that were caught shoplifting in a Sears in Colorado Springs. They, apparently they had shoplifted hundreds of dollars of merchandise. A store employee noticed. The store employee contacted a loss prevention person. Almost all these major stores now have a loss prevention team, security type personnel. They're not typically armed or anything like that, right? But so one of the loss prevention personnel approached the two men, confronted them, and one of the suspects displayed a knife and threatened the loss prevention officer. At this point, the suspects turned and tried to leave, but ironically, what happened was that it was almost closing time. Actually, it was closing time, and so the Sears store had actually locked the exit to keep, so it's one of those situations, right, where we've all been there, right? You run into the store last minute, and you get in there, and then you're in there, and you get checked out, and it's closed, and what's going on? There's somebody standing there, that, like, unlocks the door and lets you out, right? Or something like that. It's kind of like what's going on here. And so these guys try to leave, and they get to the door and realize it's locked, and they can't get out. So guess what they do, Matthew?
I would have no idea. Something smart, like they return. Yeah, I read it, but I would imagine that they would probably return the items and say, "Hey, I made a mistake." And, right?
No, but these guys, they were not to be deterred from getting out of the store with their stolen merchandise. So they both proceed to pull out guns and shoot out the glass and the doors to escape.
Beautiful, beautiful.
I mean, that is just crazy. I picked up on it because I thought it was interesting. I thought it was crazy. And it just goes to show that, like, you can just about be anywhere and suddenly, without any sort of warning, find yourself in a potentially deadly situation. And be alert, be aware, be prepared, be well trained. And speaking to this to some extent, just today, we got a reverse 911 call here locally. I'm sitting here at home, and the phone rings, and I have this number programmed into my phone. It comes through a system called Code Red, and so I just have this number programmed in the phone as Code Red. So I know as soon as that call comes in, and it comes in anytime there's severe weather, there's a severe thunderstorm, a tornado warning, which is kind of rare where we're at, but they do happen sometimes. We had one 2 years ago, but anyway, I have it programmed, so I see Code Red and I go, ah, crap, something's going on. And I've shared in the past before on the podcast how we had the carjacking suspect that ended up in our yard and ended up getting arrested, right in our neighbor's driveway next door. And we got a Code Red alert with that situation saying, carjacking suspect in your area. So today we got another one, and it said 20s, black male, 5'9", wearing black coat, camo pants, considered armed and dangerous. Police are investigating in the area of, and it gave an intersection, which, by the way, is not like, it's not like it's right. It's probably a good, it's almost a mile away from me, but it's still kind of close, right? Mm-hmm. And we're not really accustomed to these sort of things, but it's apparently becoming more of a problem in the last year. Jacob, I told him the story. He's like, dude, you got to get it. You got to move. You got to get a different neighborhood. I'm like, I like my neighborhood. It's fine. Except that it has been getting crazy lately. Anyway, so it turns out that the Wells Fargo Bank, I think it was Wells Fargo, but it's the only bank that's right there at this intersection, so it had to have been the Wells Fargo, that it was robbed by an armed man, and they didn't know where he went, so that, you know, he could have ended up in our neighborhood for all we know. And to my knowledge, they haven't caught him yet. So just like I said, it goes to show how you never know. You can find your – oh, and get this. I had just finished teaching a concealed carry class this morning, and I drive right through that intersection and right by that bank. And I'll tell you, I drove by that bank and got home, and that code red alert happened maybe 15 minutes later.
Huh.
So like either that had just gone down right after I went through there, or maybe it had even happened already, because sometimes it takes some time for those alerts to go out.
Right.
Yeah. You know what I mean? And there was not police there at that intersection, I'll tell you that much. So I know it hadn't, like, they hadn't responded yet. So it had to have just, you know, like, I'm like, holy crap, you know, I got stopped at that intersection, you know? Yeah. Bank robber robs a bank, runs out, carjacks you. I mean, you see what I'm talking about? Like, and I was thinking about it, and it's like, wow, I probably wasn't as alert as I could have been, you know, driving through there today, you know. So, you know, heads up, head on a swivel, be alert, be aware.
Yeah, I think that this Sears store should take after Levi's and just put up a sign or something, or say, hey, we don't want you to carry guns in this store, and then that would solve this whole problem. They would have never done that. I mean, they, you know what I mean? They wouldn't have had this problem, but. I don't know. That's just my way of thinking.
Well, you know, it's funny too, because it would not surprise me one bit to see Sears release a statement next week saying, you know, we don't want customers bringing guns into our stores. And it's like, yep, that would have totally saved you there.
we had to replace two windows of doors, and now we're not going to allow you to carry guns in here, because it'll make everything safer.
Right, right.
I don't know, maybe I'm a little bit cynical right now. So,
aren't we all a little bit? So let's get into this next one, and I think this is one we could have a little bit of fun with. And I'm going to kind of let you take the lead a little bit, more or less, on this story, Matthew. But here's the title. This is on Breitbart.com. Of course, this is a fake news site, just so you know, folks. Full disclosure here, this is a fake news site. but here's the title. Valerie Jarrett, my grandfather may not have died if he didn't have a gun for self-defense. Take it away.
Right. You did hear that right. You read that correctly. He may not have died if he didn't have the gun for self-defense, because Valerie Jarrett, her grandfather.
And who is she, just in case folks don't know or don't remember?
She, if I remember, she is, what did she,
she's a senior advisor for President Obama.
Right, but she did. I thought she did something else too, as far as Sandy Hook or something. But I'm not sure. Maybe not. But yeah. So she's a senior advisor, and so her grandfather is basically robbed. Right? They two guys break into this guy's home, have a fake gun that they're going to rob him with, inside his home. He has a gun on him, pulls out his real gun, but doesn't have the strength to pull the trigger or the training. And these two guys see that, pick up on it, 'cause you know, criminals are predatory by nature. They grab the gun, his gun, and shoot him. So mm-hmm. Unfortunately her grandfather dies, which is unfortunate. But instead of thinking that, boy, you know, it's unfortunate that these two criminals decided, you know, to commit a crime and kill my grandfather, she says, well, had he not had a real gun, he wouldn't have been killed, which is bizarre to me. It's almost like bizarro world here, but that's apparently the thought process of some people that, you know, just, it's not the criminal fault. It's not, you know, their evil intent or anything. It's the fact that you had a gun and you didn't know how to use it. So, yeah. You know, I hate to kick somebody when they're down, or, you know, the gentleman died, and it's unfortunate, and I don't want to make light of that, but the fact of, you know, switching the blame onto a gun rather than the criminal who used it is bizarre to me.
Yeah. Now, where you were getting kind of the whole Sandy Hook thing as part of the narrative surrounding Valerie Jarrett, it was that this whole story has come out because she attended a gun control gathering. This was called the Vigil for Victims of Violence, held in Washington, D.C. This was just recently. And she was participating in this gathering. And at the time, she said she didn't have the strength to tell her story, this story about her grandfather, to those who attended the meeting. Instead, she decided to write her story and publish it in the Huffington Post. And so the story published there was about her grandfather, who lost his life, as you described, Matthew, after being attacked by two burglars in his D.C. office 45 years ago. And let me just quote this. So, folks, I joked about Breitbart.com being fake, you know, a fake news site. You know, some people would say this has got to be a fake story. But here's the thing. This is quoting directly from the words that she herself wrote on the Huffington Post. She wrote, "My grandfather was an avid hunter and owned several guns. He practiced dentistry in an office in the basement of his home here in D.C. 45 years ago, two burglars broke into his office in search of opiates. They threatened my grandfather with what turned out to be a toy gun. In an attempt to scare away the burglars, my grandfather pulled out one of his guns. They grabbed his gun, then shot and killed him." And then she went on to suggest that her grandfather may have lived longer if he did not have a gun to pull in self-defense. And okay, it's like, yeah, I guess that makes sense to some extent because these guys had a toy gun, all right? So they wouldn't have been able to kill him at least with a gun. But I mean, how ridiculous is this? Because, you know, it's like, all right, so this is the viewpoint of folks like Valerie Jarrett, and sorry, you know, I mean, the Obama administration, I mean, that she is behind the Obama administration to a large extent. This is their mindset, and the mindset is, you know what, folks, you don't need a gun because, you know what, these burglars, these thieves, these attackers, these intruders, they're just going to take your gun from you and kill you with your own gun. So you know what? The government, we're going to step in and take that for you to save you from yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, you know what? If you are dumb enough to have a gun and not know how to use it and not be trained with it, which is the whole basis of why we do this podcast, is we want to help people be law-abiding, responsible, well-trained individuals, you know, where it comes to firearm defense. If you're dumb enough to not be responsible about this and you get shot and killed with your own gun, well, you know, I guess survival of the fittest is at work here. You know?
Yeah. I mean, I would suggest that, you know, I understand there's an argument that he may have lived longer if he did not have a gun on him, but I would argue the fact that he had a gun, he might have lived longer had he known how to use it.
Yeah.
I mean, exactly. I think that would be definitely, you know, it's bizarre to me. And like you said, you know, that's why the podcast and training, whether you go to live person training or you read articles or whatever amount of information you can get, you know, you're being responsible, and just simply having the gun doesn't make you safer. You have to know how to use it. You have to have that level of training. You know, you don't have to be the level of a police officer, or, you know, you just have to have the level of training that you can defend yourself and use this firearm. And he obviously didn't. But to blame the fact that, you know, him having a gun, you know, somehow was a reason why he died, and take out the whole equate part of the equation that these two people were criminals and broke into his home office to get drugs. I mean, that's a huge part of the equation. I think it's being overlooked.
You described it as bizarro world, and it is, because like how you don't reason this this situation and this logic out in such a way that you like how you end up at the conclusion that she ends up with at, and this is a conclusion that a lot of gun grabbers support and proliferate throughout their various means of media all the time. It is exactly that. It's bizarre world. It's a complete failure to use your God-given brain to think through stuff, and it's what it is. It's logic and reason, and this is simply not that. Speaking of, here's my response to Valerie Jarrett. And by the way, you know what? I'm really sorry that you lost your grandfather at far too young of age. Certainly he was, too early in his years to have his life ended unnecessarily. And, I grew up not knowing one of my grandfathers. He passed away before I was even born in a car accident. My other grandfather, I just lost this last year. And, I love those men, even the one I didn't meet, personally, just getting to know him vicariously through my grandmother and other family members. I love those men. And I'm sorry, Valerie, that you lost your grandfather in this situation. But here's my response. Like Matthew, like you touched on about how, well, he might have lived longer had he been able to use this gun effectively. My response is the fact that every week on this podcast, we share stories in our Justified segment that illustrate that very point, that show and demonstrate how average, everyday citizens are able to successfully, and some are not very well trained at all, and they just are a little bit lucky or whatever, and some happen to be very well trained, I'm sure. But the fact is, every week we share stories where people's lives are saved because they have their gun. And so here's our first one. Actually, this is I didn't pull a lot of Justified stories this week, but this one is from Greenville Online, a story that took place in, I forgot the state. This is in I was gonna say North Carolina, but I could be totally wrong in that. Anyway, I'm sorry, folks. We talk about so many things, you get them all mixed up. But go search or look at the news article on greenvilleonline.com. As always, the news stories and things are in the show notes with links. But the title here is Alleged Intruder Dies, Shooting Investigated in Easley. And so what happened here was a 27-year-old man was killed after he broke into someone's home. And that someone's home was a 25-year-old homeowner who, after having a confrontation inside his home, was forced to shoot and kill this intruder. The story kind of goes like this. The homeowner said he came home from work about 8 a.m. and found a man inside his house. When the homeowner confronted the man, who was in possession of several of the homeowner's guns, he charged the homeowner and a struggle ensued. The homeowner said he was able to get control of one of the guns and fired several shots in the direction of the alleged intruder. It appeared that the alleged intruder was struck several times and fell on the back deck as he tried to leave. The homeowner was not injured and no one else was home when the incident occurred. And the homeowner said he remembered meeting the alleged intruder several years ago, but didn't live or work with him. But they somehow, may have had a connection somewhere, which is not all that unusual, because like you make these connections with people, over the years, and maybe they discover or learn that, Riley may have something of value at home, mm-hmm. and they find an opportunity to maybe go and take advantage of that. So quite a story here, and it's interesting because, he talks about how he came home from work at 8 a.m. So he's working a very unusual shift, compared to most people. And it's interesting that this occurs. It's kind of a non-typical time compared to a lot of situations we share. But the fact is, like, these sorts of things can happen any time of day. quite a story. Matthew, I mean, what do you think? I kind of thought it was interesting that this intruder already had in his possession several of the homeowner's guns. So that kind of tells you something there, I think, a little bit.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know, you know, we're always talking about securing your firearms in a safe and things like that. You know, in this situation, I don't know if he broke into a safe or if the guns were unsecure. However, he got a hold of the guns. But, you know, coming into, I mean, put yourself in that situation. You come in and you see somebody in your home, and not only are they in your home, you know, illegally in your home, but they have firearms. And I don't know if they were loaded or not, or if, you know, maybe the guy who's stealing them didn't even know how to use them or wasn't familiar with them. But the homeowner obviously was, because yeah, he was able to get one that, you know, was most likely loaded, or maybe he knew that was the loaded one and fought over that one so he could at least stop this guy. But yeah, just kind of a weird, you would think that, you know, maybe this person knew that this guy had guns. I remember, you know, going to investigate when people would call and you get dispatched out to a call of, you know, hey, somebody broke in and stole my stuff. A lot of times the first question you ask, not the first, but one of the big questions you ask is, hey, did you have anybody over your house recently within the last couple months, parties or anything that people that you kind of knew but didn't really know? And oftentimes that's the case, you know, this guy's 25 years old. So maybe he's having, you know, he had a Super Bowl party and somebody, a friend of his invites a friend of theirs. And, you know, you have somebody over there and they see he's got guns. And, so, you know, lessons is, you know, you always want to learn something from stories and people's mistakes. And I always say, you know, and I always told people, you know, if there are people in your home that you don't know, don't let them know, you know, that you don't know very well. Don't ever let them know that you have valuable things. I mean, it's kind of common sense, but sometimes, you know, you kind of get carried away and maybe they were talking about guns or whatnot. And this guy said, you know what, I'm going to break back in a couple weeks and, or a month or so and get this guy's guns. And luckily, you know, he was able to handle himself because it could have turned the other way very easily.
Yep. Absolutely. By the way, I said I thought this was North Carolina. It's actually South Carolina, so I was close. I'm sorry, you know, Southeasterners, I'm not as well-versed in that part of the country. But anyway, yeah, you know, that's one of my thoughts was, you know, were these guns secured? You know, because oftentimes, you know, and this is a 25-year-old guy. You know, maybe he lives at home alone, you know, and I could totally see myself if I didn't have a wife and kids and I live somewhere alone that I would probably wouldn't lock at least some guns up, you know, like they'd just be like, you know, on my nightstand or, you know, in the closet or whatever, because you're like, you know, I don't need to, I don't have little ones running around or whatever. But, you know, I've shared the story before, but a number of years ago, my brother-in-law had his home broken into. And he had a 9mm handgun stolen because he didn't have it secured. So, you know, if you had a proper safe, I'll tell you, Matthew, I mean, this, unless somehow this guy knew the code or, you know, or he knew how to break into a safe, which is probably not that likely. But, you know, if you have a high end safe, like he ain't getting his hands on those guns. You know what I mean? Exactly. So, mm-hmm. So, you know, I see some failure on the homeowner's part to some extent here. And I also have to think, you know, what would the better thing be? Wrestling over the guns with this guy or the fact that you were already carrying a gun on your person and you were able just to simply, like, you walk in, you're like, holy crap, this dude's got five guns in his hands. Draw, bang, 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 you know?
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Situation solved. So that's why, you know, and this really became such a big, emphasis in my own life after, you know, we had that whole carjacking suspect situation that ended up in our backyard. That just was like, you know, I already was carrying pretty much all the time, even when I was at home, but I said, never again am I going to be, you know, relaxing around the house and not have basically a gun concealed on my person. because you never know, and you're going to have, like, you get in your home, in your place of security and safety and comfort, and you let your guard down. And I said, yeah. I can't ever let that happen again. So anyway, lots of good things to take from that story, and you know, I'm glad it worked out for this guy, for this homeowner in Greenville, South Carolina. I mean, good for you, and I hope he learned something from the whole experience as well. Speaking of justified shootings, I just want to preview and highlight the fact that, folks, you're not going to want to miss this Wednesday's episode. Wednesday, December 21st, we have a special podcast episode where we interview a man who was forced to use deadly force to not just save his life, but the life of someone else as well. And you're not going to miss it. It's a it's just one of those things you get done, you know, like Jacob and I interviewed this guy over the phone, and we get done talking to him, and we just, you know, and Jacob and I are talking amongst ourselves, and just like, you know, mind blown. Just, it's just so crazy to hear, you know, some of these things firsthand, because we read these news stories online, you know, in various news sources, and, you know, it's just a news story. But then you get this person's story, their backstory, you know, their background. You get all of that firsthand, and it just, you know, it the whole thing comes alive, and you fully understand and appreciate just how real it is and was, and you know, and you put it in the context that this is just, these are normal people, you know, and it goes back to, I think it was episode 28, I want to say, was the one we had with Paco Sarder, Black Muslim man in the Detroit area that had to draw his gun. He didn't fire any shots, but he had to draw his gun to save a woman's life who was being stabbed by her own, you know, mother right in front of the GM, you know, headquarters and, you know, building. Another, you know, mind-blowing, you know, interview, just like, wow, you know, because it's so real. And folks, I hope you appreciate that, and don't miss this interview, because a lot of good things come out of it. So stay tuned for that this Wednesday on the Concealed Carry Podcast, and you're not going to hear that interview anywhere else. I can promise you that. So one last story here, and I call this a bonus story, because, and I put it last because it's almost like a justified story, but it's a bad one. It doesn't go the right way. So in Tennessee. Speaking of which, our interviewee this Wednesday is from Tennessee. So anyway, in Hamilton County, Tennessee, man says he thought his wife was intruder, shot her in the ear.
Not good.
That is not good for family and marriage relationships.
No, there's going to be some arguments, I think, developing from that.
Oh man. So yeah, okay, so here's the story real quick. A man accidentally shot his wife early, and this is coming from WRCB TV. WRCB is the call station of this local, I believe this is an NBC affiliate in Chattanooga, Tennessee, Channel 3 news station there. WRCBTV.com. Here's the story. A man accidentally shot his wife early Thursday morning, mistaking her for an intruder, according to the Hamilton County Sheriff's Office. HCSO deputies responded to the report of a shooting on Blanche Road about 4:20 a.m. When authorities arrived, it was found that the husband had been sleeping in the bedroom and was awoken by his wife, who had been downstairs in the kitchen working. When the wife returned to the bedroom, the husband was awoken, startled, and accidentally fired his weapon, believing she was an intruder. Wow.
Yeah.
How about know what you're shooting at?
Yeah.
Matthew?
Identify your target. I mean, I always, yeah, you know, I'm always perplexed, or, you know, because this comes up quite a bit, and it's an argument for a lot of people, like, oh, you're more likely to shoot a family member with your gun, or mistake a family member for an intruder and shoot them, than actually shoot an intruder, which it should never happen, because no matter how dark it is, no matter what the situation is, you still have to identify your target. You can't just shoot at a noise. So, you know, I always tell people, you know, there's no way that you will shoot your spouse or a family member unless you intend to shoot your spouse or family member if you identify the target, you know? Even in low light situations, even after waking up and stuff, I think if you've been around a family member for a long time, you know you can tell, you know, even in a dark area, it's your wife or your daughter or your brother walking, you know, you just know them, right? There'd be never a time in my life where I would shoot at, you know, an apparition in the night. You know, you gotta identify your target. I mean, your threat. You gotta identify what you're shooting at. I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying this was intentional. Maybe he really did think she was an intruder. I don't know, but
I think he probably did think she was an intruder. But like you said, I mean, you gotta identify your target. Like, even if you think it's an intruder, you still like. Here's the thing. Unless it was very clear that somebody was on top of me in the act of severely beating me or stabbing me or trying to hurt me or whatever, like I don't see myself ever jumping up and going, "Oh crap, there's somebody in my room. I don't know who it is. Let me grab my gun and just shoot at it." Like, yeah. Like
indiscriminately either, just start shooting.
Yeah. Like, I mean, wouldn't you at least be like, "Oh, who's that?" You know, or who are you? You know, I mean, like even something as simple as that. And if it's your wife, of course, it's just me, honey. You know, like, oh, okay. You know, I mean, like a simple statement, a simple question, a simple command would have cleared this up right away. Here's the other thing. You know, I'm carrying, as is pretty typical with me anymore now, I got my Glock 19. I'm going to go to bed here in a little bit. It's pretty late. It's really late for you, Matthew. This is going to go in my little quick access safe that's, you know, bolted down in my bedroom here next to the bed. And inside there is a weapon-mounted light. I don't carry the light on me when I'm carrying concealed all the time, but in that safe is a weapon-mounted light. So when I put this away, whew, light goes on. And guess what? You should keep either on your nightstand, next to your bed, or in your quick access safe a separate flashlight. Holy crap, what a concept. Like, exactly. I would not ever shoot my gun until I have at least turned on my weapon-mounted light or turned on a separate flashlight and gone, what is that? You know, you just don't shoot until you can identify the target, no matter the circumstance, pretty much. That's just simple training. I know not everybody has the training and not everybody has the knowledge. This guy clearly didn't. He screwed up big time. I'm sure he recognizes that fact now. And the interesting thing from the story is that they don't anticipate any charges being filed. The district attorney said, you know what? If we filed charges, it's entirely likely this guy would simply argue that he felt threatened and he's justified to do so under self-defense law in Tennessee. And yeah, it was his wife. And yes, he made a bad judgment call, but that was, you know, that was his thought process. You know, even with the flaws that he had in that thought process, that was the thought process. It's unfortunate and fortunate at the same time. It was, you know, I hate to say it, just his wife. You know, like if it was his neighbor or his cousin or his long lost uncle that or something like that, might, you know, but it's like, you know, his wife's not going to. Well, she might, but, you know, like, yeah, this dude's already in enough trouble. I could see these cops and this DA just being like, I'd hate to be that guy.
There's nothing that the justice system can put on this guy that he's not going to go through for the rest of his entire life.
They might get called back to that house because she's beating on him.
Yeah. I find out stuff I did, like, you know, I've been married 15 years now.
Oh, nice.
So I remember, I get called out and stuff. Yeah, I don't remember, but apparently, like, you know, 12 years ago I did something and, you know, I still get called on it. This guy, I mean, I'm going to use this as my excuse. Well, at least I didn't shoot you in the ear, you know.
Oh man, that's a good one. Apparently I'm not unique in that, you know, my wife brings up things from way back when either. Oh, good times, good times. We've been married 11 and a half years now, so you know, trying to catch up to you. One day I'll get there, right? Anyway. Good stuff, Matthew. Interesting news stories. Hopefully, folks, you're able to learn some stuff from this. And so before we let you go, today's episode is brought to you by Guardian Nation. Guardian Nation is the community for devoted gun people focused on guarding themselves, their families, homes, and communities. This is our membership that is available here only at USA Firearm Training, where, you know, if you'll check it out, check out what you have access to: monthly training and drill videos, discounts on products in our store, monthly Guardian Nation live broadcast. We just had this a few days ago with Kyle Lamb. Go look him up if you don't know who he is. You should know who he is, but if you don't, go look him up. Fantastic live broadcast we had with Kyle Lamb. Were you watching, Matthew?
Yeah.
It was good. I mean, right?
It was a great idea. Yeah, he's a funny guy. He's an entertaining guy to listen to, too.
Yeah.
So on top of, like, getting actual, you know, some good information, he's an entertaining guy to talk to.
Yeah. Yeah. Really, it was a wonderful time we had together with Kyle Lamb. And there's that. Also, a quarterly box of gear. We're just going to send you every quarter, as long as you remember, we're going to send you a quarterly box of all kinds of self-defense, firearm-related gear. You'll get a gift certificate for a in-person training course from any of our instructors in our national network that is constantly, you know, by the week, growing nationwide. It's a no-brainer to become a member of Guardian Nation today. Go right now to guardiannation.com. Check out the details. Sign up now. Don't miss it. I mean, I know how many of you listen to this podcast. There's thousands of you now listening to the podcast, each episode of this podcast. You know, we've had a wonderful response to the numbers of you that have signed up to become Guardian Nation members. But I know there's thousands of more of you still that have yet to check this out and get signed up. So you're listening to this podcast episode. Don't delay. Go check it out today. How's that for a rhyme? GuardianNation.com. So with that, I already introduced that the fact that this Wednesday's episode on the 21st, we've got this fantastic interview with this guy that had to defend himself and a third party in Tennessee just a few months ago. We actually reported that story on this podcast, and we were able to connect with him and get him lined up for this interview. You don't want to miss it. Check it out. So we've you know, had a great episode here today, Matthew. I thank you for your time. We're actually recording this pretty late Saturday evening, and it's actually early Sunday morning for you now. So thanks for being such an awesome, great guy, and for being part of our network of instructors.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it, Mr. Bowman, and I appreciate every time being here with you.
Great, man. So we're going to let you all go now, folks. And Matthew, you take care, be safe, get a good night's rest. Everybody, you know, take to heart what we've talked about today. Train hard, be responsible, be safe out there, and we'll see you next time.
A reminder that laws vary from place to place, and we encourage listeners to seek local legal advice to understand applicable laws. USA Firearm Training and the Concealed Carry Podcast strive to share insights and stories about firearm-related incidents and laws, but things could be different where you live, or laws may have changed by the time you listen to this. We cannot be held liable for your actions based on the information shared in the podcast.